I've kind of cobbled together this weird set of skills that have all kind of come together to make me apparently just right for doing character design on Magiswords. So, like, I think what I can take away from all of this is just, like, always be absorbing information and skills and, you know, learn wherever you can, because you never know where it's going to wind up being useful. Because, yeah, all these different weird little things that I've done seem to have come together and melded into, you know, making me eligible to work on this animation job, which I never really thought I would be able to do.
Hello! You're listening to the Ink and Paint Girls podcast, where we celebrate women working in animation, illustration, and comics. In an effort to share their stories, we not only cover the steps they have taken to get to their dream jobs, but also the struggles. We highlight artists, writers, and producers. We explore the ups and downs of working in the industry and discuss female representation behind the scenes and on the screen. When Lindsay Smith Carosa, character designer and voice actress on Cartoon Network's Mighty Magiswords, felt uncertain about what she wanted to do in the future, she explored cartooning, hat and mask making, needle felting, and more, all while working in medical billing and graphic design. As she moved forward in her life, finding love, hardship, and ridiculous amounts of traffic, she found a home in the wonderful world of animation.
My name is Lindsay Smith Carosa. I am a character slash prop slash everything designer on the new hit show on Cartoon Network called Mighty Magiswords. And I also do voices on the show.
What?
Yeah. And that's pretty much my deal.
So, wow, that's really quite a job description. This is your first show.
Yes.
So that's amazing. Quite a renaissance woman. So before we get into how and what exactly that all entails, let's rewind all the way back to the moment you decided that you loved animation or art. Like, what was your, like, origin story?
Okay, well, if we're gonna go all the way back, I have always drawn stuff. You know, I think every little kid draws stuff, but, you know, I my whole life been an artist, and my mom was an artist before me, and my dad was a musician, so, you know, they certainly encouraged mine and my sister's, you know, creative pursuits. But yeah, I would just all the time be drawing. I have there's boxes and boxes of paper of drawings in my mom's garage of just, like, you know, weird little creatures. My sister and I had this this game that we would play with, like, our neighborhood friends called Killer Bat, where we draw weird little monsters and then spend time like, oh, okay, well, this is this monster's name, and this is what it does, and this is my picture of it, and then we'd, like, role play and play as those creatures. And so I have boxes and boxes of just, like, look at these weird little characters that I would then pretend to be. And I watched, you know, a ton of cartoons growing up. My parents didn't really like more contemporary cartoons of the day, so I watched a whole lot of Warner Brothers and Tom and Jerry, and then eventually got into Nicktoons and stuff like that. I was a huge Rocko's Modern Life fan.
Nice.
But yeah, it's just a lot of drawing on every surface that I could get my hands on.
And that's literal, because you also, like, do a few other things besides draw, like sculpting.
Oh, yeah. Like, I had kind of, like, a weird art education, and then I just kind of took, you know, any time I had the opportunity, I would, you know, take art classes, and it wasn't always drawing or painting. Sometimes it was sculpting, and, like, I had the opportunity to take some, like, community college type art classes. Like, they opened them up to the elementary school students, so they had a bunch of, you know, classes for kids, and so I took a bunch of those. Well, like, in high school, I took an art class, and that one involved sculpting and mask making. I don't know where the mask that I made was, but it was this cool, like, dragon mask with, like, metallic paint and stuff. And it just wound up being, like, 2 feet tall. And I painted dragons on the side of it because I was obsessed with dragons, as, you know, all through my life. I took a few art classes, but at that point I was kind of interested in band, and so that was my set extracurricular art thing. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of room for me to take, you know, much more, but in college I took some art classes, sort of, would you say, in defiance of my major, which for a while was philosophy, and then became creative writing, and I wasn't supposed to be able to take art classes because they were supposed to be reserved for the art majors, but I kind of snuck in due to, I think, a scheduling glitch, and took some art classes, and those included not just painting, but welding and building things out of found objects and stuff, and so I have this weird little disparate mix of art classes that I've taken over the years.
So when you graduated, was your major still philosophy or creative writing?
It was.
Or did you finally make the leap?
My first year there, it was philosophy, and then I switched it to creative writing. I tried to get into the art program there, so I did, you know, just on my own at home, I did a lot of digital art. I had Photoshop and other art programs, and I had, like, so now everybody uses Cintiq. They're all over the place, and Wacom pads, and everybody knows what they are. My family was, like, early adopter of the drawing tablet. We had this program called Dabbler that was supposed to mimic the look of an art desk, and so, like, the user interface was, like, fake wood, and
oh,
when
wow.
you open, when you, like, clicked on a tool, this little drawer sound would open, and you'd select the tool, and so I played around a lot in that, and that, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, had an animation component. Was like a flipbook thing, so I'm sure I made little flipbook animations. But so yeah, like, I'm mostly, my focus was on digital art, and I think I got pretty good just on my own. I was like, look back on some of the artwork that I made, put a lot of work into that, it looks pretty good. And so I put together my little portfolio that with a cover letter that said, hey, I know this is all digital art, I really want to learn how to do traditional art, but this is what I have, and, you know, I think it's pretty good. And the response I got was from the UCR art department was, we don't teach digital art, we don't think you're a good fit. So, thanks.
and UCR, what college is that?
University of California, Riverside. So, yeah, so I got this rejection letter. I'm trying to remember if this was before or after I had already taken a bunch of, like, you know, the prerequisite classes to try to get into the art program, which included a ton of art history. Like, the art history program at UCR was kind of famously, like, bloated to where, like, even in just the art major, you had to take kind of a disproportionate amount of art history classes.
Interesting.
And so I took a bunch of those and just got so sick of learning about Dadaism. it was very, very deep art history and not the sort of goofy stuff that I was more interested in. So I got that rejection letter, and I was like, well, then I'm going to focus on writing stuff. Because at the time, I was making comics, both my own webcomic and also submitting comics to the UCR newspaper. So I was like, well, I feel pretty good about my drawing skills. I guess maybe I'll work on my writing skills. So that's why I went into creative writing. UCR is one of the, if not the only college, happy to One of the few colleges that has a creative writing program in California, on the West Coast. I don't know. There was something like that. Like,
yeah.
We're the only something in something that has this.
And this was a little while back, too. So, at that time.
Yes,
that's
true,
what it
true,
was.
Yeah. But, that was my journey of, like, thinking I wanted to be a philosophy major and realizing, no, I don't want to do that.
What was it about philosophy that, like, when did it click that you're like, no, this isn't for me?
I mean, I think it was, again, you know, kind of similar to the art history classes where I got, like, so deep into thinking about thinking and pulling apart how we think about things and the nature of reality, where it was, like, this is still interesting, but I don't know if this can be my whole college thing. But at the time, 19, 20 years old, it's like, my whole life! Not really realizing that you can do one thing in college and then still be able to change what you do later on. But I was like, I don't know what I can do with a philosophy degree. Let me go get the slightly less useless creative writing degree.
So this webcomic, let's talk about that. Is this Daisy is Dead?
It's Daisy is Dead, yeah. Which maybe some people out there know me about. I don't know, it's actually been a while now since I've gotten the hopeful message, like, is it ever going to come back? Because I didn't do a good job. I didn't really end it. I just kind of stopped. But yeah, Daisy is Dead is a comic that I did for about 4 years in college, and I think another year or two after college before I got my first real full-time job and just did not have the time or energy to work on it anymore. Starring a sexy zombie girl named Daisy who had seeds embedded in her skin, so she would just sprout flowers from her skin. Mm-hmm. She had one growing out of her cleavage.
I thought that was so cute. You get some really great secondary action out of that flower in her cleavage, too.
Yes. And that's something that, like, I go back and read the comics, and I'm like, oh, that was very funny. These are good. I wonder if people want me to bring them back.
Yeah. And I'm sure, like, your creative writing classes really helped enhance it when you made that change.
I'm sure, yes. One thing that I think I took the most from is I took a series of playwriting courses as part of that, and I learned a lot about telling a story and showing a story with limited resources. So, like, one of the big things I took away is don't add an extra character where you don't need one. Because in a play, like, that's a whole other person set of costumes and stuff that you have to bring in. But just, you know, I think within a comic standpoint, having just a ton of characters where you might not need them can get kind of confusing, and so it's probably better to reuse characters where you can. It's like, do I need to have a whole new person to say this thing? Or does one of my characters, would one of my characters maybe already feel this way? Would this, you know, small side character who I didn't think about much before maybe serve this purpose just fine, and then I can expand them and learn more about them? So yeah, that was a big thing that I took away from that.
That's a really big lesson to learn, and I'm sure you still use it in animation, too.
Yeah. Well, and I can remember telling Kyle, my husband, who made the show, that, and I think he's kind of incorporated it into the show, and it's especially helpful making this show, because for our Flash show, every time we introduce a new character, I have to make a new model for it.
Yeah, you have to design it.
Yeah, speaking as the person who has to make the models, like, all for not having to do a new turnaround. Yeah, I'm sure I learned storytelling tidbits tools from that.
Creative writing is where you graduated in,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you were graduating, like, what was kind of the climate in your life? Like, did you know what you were going to do next?
I think I thought I was, like, not super well, but, like, I had some idea that I might, you know, write a comic book, because that was my senior thesis, was storyboarded a comic book. And it was, you know, I was really lucky to, you know, find a professor who would let me do that, but he was very enthusiastic about it. He told me, like, oh, you know, I know such and such person at this comic book publishing company, like, you know, I'll give you their contact information to see if you can, you know, make something happen. And I don't remember if he never gave me the information or if he did and that person never responded to me, but that didn't go anywhere. Yeah, after graduating college, I was kind of like, I don't super know what I'm gonna do. I had briefly a crappy part-time job in medical billing that Kyle's medical billing boss got me, that was like 5 hours a week of just copying and filing, and I was driving from Sun Valley to like central LA, this tiny hospital in a not awesome part of town, and that sucked, and that was kind of where I was floundering, you know, barely being able to contribute to rent, because at that point, like, for a little while I tried to do that from Riverside, and then I, you know, moved in with Kyle in Sun Valley. And eventually, a friend of ours said, hey, this guy who usually temps for us at this pet supply company where I work, you know, helping me with graphic design, is currently in China for the next 3 or 4 months, and so I need somebody to come temp and help me out there. And I said, please, please, I would like to not have my crappy crap job anymore, because this was going to be, you know, it was like, you know, she's like, it might be just, you know, 3 days a week, it might wind up being full-time, if nothing else, you know, I can make sure that it turns into at least you having a full-time job at one of the pet stores, you know, frontward and temp once the guy comes back from China. I'm like, that'd be great. I'd like to not do medical billing anymore. I'd rather work in a pet store, please. And so I did. So I went to work with her.
And that job was actually further away, right?
Yes, that was in Torrance. And anyone who doesn't know about the layout of L.A., Torrance, from where I live currently in Burbank, is a little bit further in Sun Valley, but Torrance is 30 miles from Burbank. And so I was driving 30 miles each way through the heart of downtown L.A., the worst traffic in the country. We might be rivaling for D.C., but the worst traffic, top two worst traffics, every day. And it was awful. But that took me a while to wear me down, you know. At the time, I was just like, yay, a job where I'm doing some amount of artwork.
Did you use the time for anything? Like,
listen to a lot of podcasts. At one point, kind of later on, when I was like, when it was really driving me insane, like I put together a singing playlist, and so I would sing, and then when I wanted to add to that, I would pick a song, like, I'd like to learn to sing this song, and then I would treat it as though I was preparing for a musical. Like, you know, I'd go back line by line and be like, okay, like, as though I was memorizing the song to perform it,
yeah.
I'd just go back and learn it, and so a bunch of songs that I know really well just because I'm so bored. I'm going to put my mind to this as though it's a task that I need to do.
And how long were you in the graphic design job? Because it turned full-time.
Yes. Yeah, okay. So what happened with that was, so that was my friend Sam, who I think at the time had worked there for a year or two. And the way she kind of got that started is she worked at the pet store, and she noticed, like, hey, guys, your ads and stuff are kind of, you know, kind of crappy and boring. If you hire me on as graphic designer, I can redo all your branding and, you know, really set you apart from every other, you know, mom and pop pet store. They hired her on, and she, like, completely redid the face of them and made everything these, like, really cute, stylized, vectorized animals. And so that's, you know, kind of created a job for herself.
That's really gutsy.
Yeah, yeah.
So Sam created this job just for herself. Since they didn't have a graphic designer at that time, they didn't have a second graphic designer job at that time.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it started out as just her, and then eventually they realized, oh, yes, this is beneficial, so we should keep going forward and having, you know, this really cute, appealing design look for all of our ads and signs and stuff, and those change out every month, and so just have to create things. And so I think, you know, as the years went on, it kind of created the need for her to have extra help. And so at the time, she was just having, you know, part-time temporary work from a friend of hers. And so, as I said, while he was in China, I was there helping her picking up the slack that he would have been doing. Well, I did such a good job that I got myself a full-time job. Because she eventually was like, oh, well, they want me to hire someone on full-time. You know, she's like, you know, I don't mean to feel offended, but, you know, you don't have as much experience. And so try to find someone out there who's is a professional graphic designer to come in and do this. But you couldn't find anyone who was as qualified as I was, at the very least, who wasn't going to cost an arm and a leg.
Mm.
Yeah, like, I got good enough in the, I don't know, 4 or 5 months that I was there doing temp work to be able to be brought on full-time as a graphic designer, and I had never worked with Illustrator before doing this job, and I got good enough on Illustrator to do this work, and, you know, I hadn't had a ton of graphic design experience before this, and it's something that I seem to be good at is absorbing information and kind of, like, figuring stuff out.
Basically, you have one of the most sought-after skill sets in, like, I think, professional art jobs, like graphic design or animation designing, because you have this great ability to be able to work in a style, you know? Because,
yeah,
like, you had to fit what was established by Sam,
right,
when you came, and same thing on the show you're on now. So, I mean, do you feel like there's a connection for things you learned there that you use today?
Definitely. And as far as the style thing goes, I've always been, I think, good at, like, working from an established style or character set, or, like, I seem to be better at, you know, springboarding off of something that's been started than necessarily coming up with my own thing. Kyle's asked me, like, oh, would you ever want to pitch a show? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe, but I really like just, you know, extrapolating and crafting from stuff that's already, you know, just kind of exploring and moving things forward from what's already there. But definitely going from working in Illustrator to working on a Flash show, it was very helpful because, so Illustrator is a vector program, and so I would be making these little cartoon dogs and cats in Illustrator, and Illustrator, you know, you're making things out of pieces, basically, and you're doing the same thing in Flash, and so going from making little Illustrator animals to needing to make stuff for a show that, you know, it's basically puppets, you know, it made it very easy to go from one to the other. Well, not only that, like, packaging, like, I did a lot of packaging at the pet store job, and every once in a while I'll be called upon to design some piece of packaging for the show, just because, like, sometimes it shows up and it's like, oh, they have this bag of dragon chow or whatever, or this, like, pomade, this hair gel, mm-hmm. or, like, and you, I really, like, me and the other designers, like, really want, you know, any opportunity for a funny gag, like, even if it's only going to show up for a moment, just to, like, make the packaging as funny as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's somebody freeze frames on it, like, what? So, yeah, that, and just kind of knowing what is appealing and what reads clearly and what colors go nicely together and stuff like that, I think that all carried over into the animation job.
Cool. And how long were you there?
6 years.
Ooh.
Yes.
And you lived in Burbank, Sun Valley that entire time.
Yes.
That's insane.
Yes. I look back on it now, I'm like, why did I do that for so long?
Our hearts go out to you.
Yeah. No. And I, you know, I'm still, to this day, like, I've, you know, I haven't been there for over 2 years now. I've been away from that horrible drive, and I'll still, like, turn to Kyle and go, like, I don't have to do that ever again. I never have to make that drive. I don't have to do, is that my drive? Now my commute is 2 miles. It's awesome.
Tell us the story of how you left that job.
Okay, so in midway, like the early timeline of Magiswords is weird. So, you know, somewhere in 2013, Kyle kind of like started getting the like, oh, Magiswords, oh, Cartoon Network likes the show. Ooh, is this going to be a thing? And so early, like late winter, early spring of 2014, Kyle started having me do designs for the first round of Magiswords stuff, which are these 15-second, 3-minute short cartoons.
And they appeared on the web, right?
Like, yeah, they appear on the web. You can see them on the CN Anything app or on the Cartoon Network website or on YouTube page. And, you know, his producer at the time, like, I had met him and Kyle had told him, oh my god, my fiance is like, she's driving torrents every day, it's awful. Like, actually, I'm going to ask you now, do you curse on this show?
Yeah,
and I'm
going to
keep saying sucks.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, it sucks so bad, and you know, really, you know, hoping to, you know, help her get out of it, and his producer, Rob, was like, oh god, yeah, we should see if we can try to get her some work and get her out of that, and so they gave me some freelance Magiswords stuff, just some freelance designs, which I would actually work on at my then job that I was still at Sentinel, that's the name of the, but, you know, at the time, like, they weren't really giving me enough to do, and I, like, they were kind of moving in a different direction with the artwork, and so I wasn't doing as many cartoon dogs, it was more, like, cleaning up, cropping dogs out of photos and putting them on packaging. It's like, I'm bored, and I'm miserable, and so I'm just gonna do this other job, and so, yeah, I would work on Magiswords stuff, you know, in between my small amount of work that I had to do it at Sentinella, and, you know, I'd come home and work on it in the evenings on the weekend, too. But, yeah, it was, like, my first bit of cartoon design work, they'd send me a chunk of, like, here are the screenshots of what we need, and I would draw it, and give it back to them, and I would make way more money for those than I did making, at my full-time job, and it was awesome.
How did you have the energy to, work all day, although you didn't have a lot of work, but, I mean, you were working on Mad Shorts there, and then you come home and do it some more, how did you, I guess, kind of manage your energy?
I mean, I think I was just so happy to be working on something that I actually cared about, because at that point, I was so burnt out on the Sentinel stuff. Sorry, Sentinel. That, it's like, I just don't care anymore. And so to have this thing that's, it's my husband's show, and it's really fun to work on, and, it's actually in my, very similar to my style. It's a little bit more free for me to have fun drawing, and so I think I was just so happy to be doing that. I have the energy for this because I care about it.
You left the job before, it was, fully greenlit for more episodes, right? What was it? Because I remember you feeling, a little,
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of like you'd made the 15-second and 3-minute ones, and that was kind of, winding down, and I didn't realize that, eventually became clear, oh, and then they just want us to make more cartoons, so I didn't really have anything to worry about at all. Yeah, that was kind of my trepidation. And I was, always very scared. I had this idea, oh my god, if I leave this job, I'm never going to be able to find another job. It's like I was going to be throwing away this very, it was hard to give up the sure thing for the, uncertain future.
Yeah, one thing about the industry, and really jobs in general, it is really scary to go from, a really stable job to, the industry where it's, job to job, and
yeah,
especially for artists, sometimes it can be, a few weeks to a couple years. So, I commend you for that. That's amazing. Way to go. But, obviously, you have a big support in your life, so, in a very supportive family, so I'm sure that helps very much. Have your family, all been supportive, this entire time?
Yes. Very, very much so. Like I said, my mom and dad have always been very supportive of, pursuing creative work, and then with Magiswords, they're just completely over the moon and excited and happy about everything that's happened for us. And and actually, one of the things I should say is at the same time as I was, dealing with trying to leave my job, I was also planning a wedding, and so part of my concern was how am I going to pay for this wedding? If I leave this job, am I going to pay for it? And blah, blah, blah. And I didn't realize that my family was going to, buy a bunch of stuff for the wedding and then not let me pay them back.
Oh.
And so I didn't actually wind up having to spend as much as I was thought I was going to on the wedding.
That's beautiful. So, wait. You guys are, in the thick of making the first collection of Magiswords while you were planning a wedding?
Yes.
Holy cow. I think I completely forgot about that. That's insane. So, during this time when you guys are actively making Magiswords and planning a wedding, how did your priorities go? Because I know some of our listeners do, want to get married eventually, but they also want to thrive in the industry. So, how did you do it?
I mean, it helped that I did have my very supportive family who are very good at throwing big events. I think there's a lot of just kind of allowing myself to trust the other people in my life to handle it. I didn't have to feel worried about the venue because my aunt and uncle straight up offered to let me use their huge, beautiful backyard.
It was such a beautiful view, too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And, my mom helped me in so many different ways. I know I didn't have to worry about the flowers because she was, every wedding that happens in our family, she does the flowers. Because she does amazing flowers. And in addition, I had all these paper flowers at my wedding because I decided I wanted paper flowers. And I made a bunch, and she made a ton. Just sat up nights just making these huge paper flowers. And so kind of being able to delegate like that and trust other people, I think, is a big part of it. And at that point, I was fortunately not working full-time at Magiswords just yet, but, yeah, it was, you know, Kyle was the one doing most of the Magiswords work. I was just over here fretting about, like, how are we going to have money?
I don't know if you're comfortable sharing this, but, I mean, I feel like it's slightly obvious in the story so far that there were some really, really difficult times for you and Kyle. Like, you took the job so far away because, like, you couldn't find work closer. And it was better than the medical billing.
Yes.
But basically, so there were some financially hard times.
Yeah.
So you went from there to being okay, you know, and making cartoons.
Yeah.
And being able to have, like, the wedding that you didn't even know you wanted because it was gorgeous. You know? So, like, I think that's an important note just to kind of, like, dwell on for a moment, because you guys have went through not having jobs, not having money, to being just okay, very okay, getting your work seen by millions of people all around the world now. I just think that's amazing. And within only a few years, too.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not lost on us. I have been likening it to, for years and years, Kyle has just been kind of like, you know, we've just been kind of hammering on this dam, trying to get just a little trickle of water, just a steady trickle of water to keep ourselves sustained. And we hammered so hard that the dam broke. And
nice.
Now we're kind of flooded, and we're kind of, it's hard to process going from, you know, living from paycheck to paycheck, you know, scraping together, trying to make ends meet, you know, dealing with credit card debt, to having more money than we know what to do with. And that's kind of crass, but just being, like, you know, so completely fine and you know, having, you know, going from Kyle struggling to get any kind of animation work to, we have a show now. And, yeah, so it's, and in addition to that, you know, even when we started getting the Magiswords show work and, you know, the different, like, green lights for different, you know, chunks of materials, it's like, you know, we're making the 3 minutes, making the 15-second ones, making the 5 minutes, and, you know, right now we're working on the 11 minutes, just, like, bit by bit getting more, them asking for more work. We, like, didn't really allow ourselves to celebrate just because we heard so many no's and had so many, you know, rugs pulled out from under us. It was like, can we celebrate now? Is it okay? Now that we have a green light for a show, can we, are we allowed to be excited yet? So yeah, that's something that we've had a hard time getting used to.
Yeah. I think that is going to inspire a lot of people that might be where you were a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I wanted to dwell on it for a moment. Because, like, you guys deserve it so much. You've worked so hard.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a big part of it, is that going into this industry, you have to expect rejection. Like, you can't work at it for 6 months, go, well, I didn't get a yes, and go home. It's going to take a while. You might have to have a crappy day job. You know, part of the reason I stayed at Sentinella for so long was so that Kyle didn't have to get another crappy day job, that he could keep trying to find animation work, which is so sparse. And so, you know, sometimes he would have work and it would combine with my paycheck and be like, okay, cool, we're comfortable. But then for long stretches of time, it's just like, okay, this is all the money that we have, and it sucks. But I, you know, wanted him to be able to keep pursuing that. And it certainly paid off, because, you know, all of that persistence, you know, got this show, and that took him a really long time. As long as I've known him, and he's been out in California for 13 years, and that entire time he's just been hammering away, trying to make anything at all happen, and this is, like, the first really big thing that's happened, and it's amazing, but it does take a really long time. You know, it can take a really long time. It takes a lot of work and persistence to make it happen.
obviously you and Kyle have this amazing, compassionate relationship. And you've both sacrificed things for each other at different times in, you guys, how long have you been together all together?
Close to 11 years.
Woo! That's amazing. So obviously you guys would jump in front of a train for each other. But, so, I mean, there are relationships out there where women put, or just people in general, will put their goals on the back burner. There's, you know, quote-unquote soulmates, their partners.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, where was your kind of head at during all of this? When you were, like, you know, working the day job, supporting your husband, or your boyfriend, fiancé, at different times?
Well, I mean, part of it was that Kyle has always been so driven to do this animation work, and I have been a little bit more adrift and not, you know, didn't always know for sure what I wanted to do. And so, you know, part of it was, well, this job is terrible, but I have it for now, and he's, you know, pursuing something that could potentially be very beneficial for us as a couple, and, you know, it's not only is it his dream, but it could eventually lead to something that could, you know, support a family and a really big future for us. So I'm just gonna keep doing this and maintain this, you know, this steady paycheck so that he doesn't have to go back to doing medical billing, which is what he was doing before he got his first major animation gig at Fanboy, and, you know, actually got a bit more of a toehold into the animation business, whereas before it was, you know, kind of a closed door. And so, yeah, it was kind of like, I don't currently know what I would be doing besides this, you know, besides, you know, I think at the time I said, like, if I didn't have to work, I'd just sit at home and make hats, because I like making hats. You know, you see some of my costume hats around my apartment.
Yeah, they're
amazing. That's my only other thing that I would be doing right now is making hats or needle felting or knitting or something like that. And it's like, well, I have this paycheck now. Let's have it be this steady thing, you know, to support us between, you know, these very fickle, intermittent animation jobs. And I, you know, I don't really know what else I would be doing because, you know, and another part of it was I don't interview well. Like, I had gotten this job, you know, at the good graciousness of my friend who took a chance on me, and I'm so thankful for her because I am terrible in job interviews. Like, I don't know how to answer this. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? What's your worst quality? I don't know. Just hire me. I do a good job. And so it was kind of, you know, dreading the idea of going back out into the workforce and writing a cover letter and having to interview and you know, sell myself. And so certainly part of it was just like, this is currently the easiest, you know, the easy path. And I count myself, you know, it's very fortunate that, you know, he started having more success in this when he did, because I really was starting to go crazy at the job. So yeah, I mean, I do think it depends on what kind of situation you find yourself in, because certainly if you actively have goals that you want to pursue and are in the kind of headspace to be able to pursue them, you're like, no, I want to go after this and make this happen, then shouldn't forego those for someone else, but certainly maybe try to work out a plan between yourself and your partner to kind of figure out, how can I not get stuck in this day job forever just to support you? So, yeah, I think it kind of depends on what situation you're in. And for me, the crappy day job was what made the most sense at the time. He definitely, you know, encouraged me to, like, at no point, you know, this is definitely a lot of stuff that I placed on myself. At no point was he like, you need to stay in your shitty job to support me. You know, I would come home and complain, and he would be like, well, you could try to find something new. And we did have these discussions where it's like, if this is so torturous for you, you should come probably try to find something new, but, you know, if you can stick with it, you know, it is a paycheck, and so you kind of have to figure out, like, how much am I willing to put up with, like, weighing the costs and benefits and such. But certainly, as I said, when he started getting, you know, the orders for Magisword stuff, he was like, okay, let's get Lindsay some of this and try to get her out of this terrible job. And so that was, you know, something he did, you know, pretty early on into the, you know, at the time was like a little mini web. It's like just like tiny pieces of content to be on an app is before we even knew it was going to be a show. But he's like, my wife's job sucks. Can we give her some freelance, please? Look out for me in that way.
So something we kind of, I don't think you mentioned it. Your development opportunities before Magiswords. Like, you worked on something with Candy.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you brought this up because I wasn't sure where it was going to fit in. But yeah, early in 2014, this was before I did the freelance for Magiswords, our friend Candy Milo, who was one of the voices of Dexter, she was the voice of Cheese, very prolific voice actress, Cheese from Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. Like, Kyle made friends with her. Yeah, that's right. She did work on Fanboy. She did voices for Fanboy, and Kyle just kind of, like, reached out to her and made friends with her, and we met her in person, and she just decided she loved us. and so we would hang out with her all the time and eat ramen with her and stuff, and, you know, I would share my awful job woes. And she's like, we gotta get you out of there. We gotta get you something. And so she, at the time, was trying to, I think, get her own show going, and so she was pitching to various studios, and so she had this idea for a show that kind of, like, sort of made use of a voice she used on another show. Okay, so she's trying to get her own idea going, and so by that point, Kyle had, you know, the contract with Cartoon Network, and he's like, I cannot legally be the artist for this. I can, in the background, you know, help, you know, shoot ideas back and forth and you know, I'll make a little song or something for this, and I'll be one of the voices in the, you know, animatic that we eventually had, but my name cannot be on it, and I cannot do the drawings. So, here's Lindsay. She do drawings. Have her do the drawings, and if it gets picked up, then wonderful. She's attached to a show. That'd be just great. And so, yeah, we, together with Candy, we wrote, you know, we kind of wrote the script for this little short. Yeah, Nickelodeon was doing a shorts program. So that's part of why we made an animatic, is they were taking pitch ideas for a shorts program. So we made this animatic, and I don't know if she's still trying to sell it, so I don't know, maybe I won't actually say what it is. But yeah, I storyboarded this short, like, it was like 2 or 3 minute cartoon. That's been my only experience with, like, actual storyboarding. Like I said, I storyboarded that comic strip in college. It's, like, very awkward. Like, I don't know why my advisor had me do it that way, but it was, like, basically just drawing the comic. But this was, like, actual storyboarding for cartoon-type things. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that was my first try at doing that. I think I did an okay job. You know, Kyle did a bit of guiding stuff, but yeah, yes, I did do that. And it, you know, one point went to, you know, when it didn't go anywhere with the Nickelodeon Shorts program, actually went with her into Cartoon Network to try to pitch it. And, you know, was about as trying to let her do most of the talking because it was her story idea, but, I don't think we sold it particularly well. They didn't pick it up. But yeah, that was a piece of animation work I did prior to, you know, getting the Magiswords freelance stuff. And that I think I mostly did it at home just because of the nature of how I needed to do it. Like, I needed to have, like, papers spread out all around me and, like, reference yeah. materials and stuff. A little bit harder to hide that at work. So yeah.
Well, that's a really amazing opportunity.
Oh, and I also did the character designs for that. Yes.
It's so cool. It's like you were just, like, percolating, and then you, like, just exploded into,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
this development project and then into Magiswords.
It's like, I've kind of cobbled together this weird set of skills that have all kind of come together to make me apparently just right for doing character design on Magiswords. So, like, I think what I can take away from all of this is just, like, always be absorbing information and skills and, you know, learn wherever you can, because you never know where it's going to wind up being useful. Because, yeah, all these different weird little things that I've done seem to have come together and melded into, you know, making me eligible to work on this animation job, which I never really thought I would be able to do.
What was your first day like? Like, emotionally, where were you?
I was very, very excited. I don't know, yeah, like, I can remember more getting the phone call from the producer just saying, like, hey, we wanted to know if you wanted to come, you know, do Magiswords full time. And it's like, the way he phrased it was like, you know, we wanted to offer you this thing if you wanted to do it. I'm like, oh, duh, yes, I want to do that. Let me think about it. Yes. Yes, I will come work full time at Cartoon Network. So yeah, it was really amazing being in the studio. And like for the first year or so that I was there, I actually had an office, and that was like really neat. And like, you know, just getting stuff to decorate the office, and just kind of the difference between working in an office versus a studio, and just like, I can wear whatever I want, and I can have as many, I can just put toys all over my desk and nobody's going to say anything to me like they did at my last job. And just, you know, put art on the walls, and I mean, I was definitely also very nervous, just because for the first part of working there, I dealt with a lot of like imposter syndrome, because certainly I had not had the traditional animation education or like a ton of experience, and so I did spend a lot of time feeling like somebody else could be doing this better. Like, I'm not doing this as good as somebody else could, and it's, you know, it's my husband's show, and so I want it to be perfect. And so, you know, just kind of dealing with, you know, me having a different standard of perfect than everybody else there, because nobody was unhappy with my work. And then also, you know, I need to quiet down this voice that tells me I'm not good enough or I don't belong here so that I can actually get my work done.
Yeah. How did you calm that voice?
Doing the work and continuing to get good feedback. And I think, like, eventually, I don't know why I, like, retained so much information about the show. I guess because it's, you know, it's in the family. But, you know, I had an eye for details and nitpicky stuff. And so I would find stuff wrong with, like, you know, cleaned up models and stuff. This character's eyes are the wrong color. Like, and I'd bring it into our directors and to Kyle. And eventually they're just like, you know, maybe you should be in on the design meeting. Because you seem to notice this stuff more. And so that was kind of like, that was kind of like a little incremental, like, okay, I have that. Like, that's like, I can do, like, that is a useful skill that I possess, is troubleshooting in addition to being able to draw it. So it's like, kind of bit by bit feeling like, okay, this is why I, in particular, am best suited for this job. And it's just kind of like, any small thing to, like, reassure myself, like, you do belong here. You know, this isn't necessarily... And then, you know, eventually searching for other character designers. And you know, we eventually found a couple of them, but, you know, okay, not everybody can draw in the style of the show right away. And the fact that you know, I had spent so much time kind of being around Kyle and watching him draw, and we had a lot of the same background influences, just, like, show my style is very well suited for this show. So just kind of, I had to keep building myself up and eventually getting to the point, you know, relatively recently where it's like, okay, I am very confident in my artwork now. I still have that, you know, nitpicky nature about, like, show details where I'm like, that's not, like, we already have a watermelon and it's this color and, like, why is it this other, like, just, like, dumb detail stuff like that to try to make keep the show consistent.
a real good eye for continuity.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There you go. You found the words where I could not.
So, I mean, you design characters, prop effects, probably, right?
Yeah, I mean,
like,
really...
you do a lot on the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I say character designer, because if I just say designer, it doesn't sound like I work on a cartoon show, but it's really, it's designer, so it's characters, it's props, it's effects, it's special poses, which is a big part of our show.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you have a lot of animation listeners who probably know what Flash is, but it's, you know, you're basically, you build a puppet in Flash, you know, it has parts that can move and stuff, and you can swap out pieces, but the stock, you know, the stock model can only do so much, and so if you want to, you know, Kyle's style is incredibly crazy and cartoony and stuff, and so if you have a drawing in the storyboard that's, like, really dynamic and cool and awesome, you don't want to try to, like, force this little puppet to try to do this, like, you know, stretch pieces out and stuff. It'd be better to just draw that pose, and so that's what special poses are, and our show has a lot of them.
And especially for the humor of the show, I don't think it would ever work with trying to manipulate those puppets to do the kind of amazingly humorous drawings.
Yeah,
that your story artists do.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually something that, like, we've had to make sure to tell our now overseas animators is, like, you know, we've given you all these, like, extra expression packs and special poses and special expressions. You can use them all throughout the show, whether or not a special pose or expression has been called out, you know, please use these eye packs and mouth packs that are not on the model. They occasionally try to, like, make an expression, like a crazy expression that's in the board with just, you know, the stock pieces, and it doesn't look right. And so, yeah, that's a big thing we've been trying to get them to understand consistently. No, use the crazy pieces that we give you.
I was wondering if that was ever going to happen, like, shipping animation overseas, because, like, for a long time, for all of the, was it 5 minutes and under episodes?
Yes.
You guys actually had animation done here.
Yes.
At Cartoon Network in Burbank, which is, like,
yeah,
kind of unheard of in the industry now.
Yeah, it's actually kind of because of us that we have, like, a little in-house animation Flash team now. Like, they kind of came in as a result of Mag Swords and this other, you know, project that was kind of coming up alongside Mag Swords. You know, they were like, hey, we want to make these in Flash. Can we get some Flash animators? And brought them in, and they stayed on for the 5-minute episodes, and they're still there, and they're still like, hey, it's pretty neat that we have an in-house Flash crew. Let's keep giving them work. and so even though they're not on the main, you know, working on the main Mag Swords show now, there's other, like, incidental tidbits that they work on that's Magic Swords related, but they're also, you know, working on stuff for the other shows, like interstitial style things.
So cool.
But yeah, so now we do send it overseas to a Flash studio in Malaysia. And yeah, and for the most part, they all speak English over there, and they all have a nerdy sense of humor. and they tend to give us real good work back, but occasionally it's just, No, you have better pieces to work with than that. Don't just raise Prahias' eyebrows, like, actually use some of the crazy eyes that we gave you.
So, how did you feel when you saw the first episode air online? Like, seeing your drawings come to life and be animated and everything?
It's pretty awesome. Yeah, just, like, and, like, each step of the way, just, like, seeing it cleaned up, seeing my drawing cleaned up, and then seeing it animated, it's just, like, it's very surreal. It's like, I did not think that this was ever going to be a thing that was going to happen. And, I should say, especially recently, one of our 11-minute episodes aired as a preview on Cartoon Network, and that episode had characters that I designed, and then, you know, in addition to, drawings that I did. And so, like, my title is character designer. Kyle still does a lot of the designing stuff for the show. Like, a lot of times if there's a new character, he'll, like, do, like, a quick sketch and be like, okay, add colors to this and do a turnaround and stuff. But, you know, with the 11 minutes, that has become much more my job is doing a lot of that pre-design and stuff. And Kyle still does that, but more of it is something that I do. And so this 11-minute episode that just aired, like, featured two monsters that I designed that were, one, I designed them kind of, like, near the beginning of, like, oh, okay, I feel like I did a really good job with that. I feel confident about that monster creature that I made. I don't feel like it looks like, you know, some dumb thing that I did. It actually looks like it belongs on TV, and so to now see it on the TV it's just a really nice feeling. And like friends have been posting screenshots of these monsters. And it's like I did that. It's so cool, and uplifting. And
that's so full circle too with your childhood drawing the monsters.
Yes.
You didn't happen to do the voices of the monsters, did you? Or what is this voice acting experience you're getting?
So I voiced two recurring characters on the show, which have not yet... I'm eagerly awaiting the day that their episodes air so that I can be like, look, that's me, I do that! And also can just, like, start drawing them endlessly and posting them to my Tumblr and stuff, because for now I can't, because nobody's seen them. You know, after Kyle or the storyboard artist storyboards, you know, the episode, and then we go to bring it into animatic, we record scratch vocals. And, you know, Kyle does most of the voices. You know, he already does most of the voice on the show, but for the scratch, he kind of, like, just does all the male voices. We have someone at the studio, Rebecca, who oftentimes does the scratch vocals for Vamber, because she does a really good Vamber. Or sometimes I'll do Vamber, and I don't do quite as good a Vamber as she does. But, you know, a couple times, you know, early on, we'd have to scratch stuff at home, and Kyle would be like, okay, we have this new character, and I kind of want her to sound like this. Can you, you know, do your best impression of that? And I don't know who I want to voice her yet or whatever, but for a while in between the 3 minutes and the 5 minutes, like, the networkers kind of figuring out what they wanted Magiswords to be, and so there was a bunch of, like, storyboarded material that never really saw the light of day just because it was them figuring out, like, what is Magiswords? Like, what are we doing with this property that we love so much? So there are a couple of, like, little weird small episodes that, you know, might not ever see the light of day because they kind of don't make any sense anymore. But, you know, for those, they had these characters in them. And Kyle's like, well, I want her to sound like this, so can you just, you know, do this voice? And I've always done just, like, goofy little voices just growing up and especially being around Kyle, who was a goofball, just only nurtured that. And so I would do this voice and he'd, you know, take it and show it to his executives and they... The couple of main character voices that I did, they just absolutely loved. He's like, well, I see no reason to find somebody else. You did a great job. And so that's how I came to voice these two recurring characters who someday I'll be able to tell the world about because I love them. But yeah, it was just kind of like, you know, him saying, this character is basically like a girl version of so-and-so, but like a little bit angrier or something. Or this character is basically... our friend who used to cut our hair, but with a lisp. and so I would do that, and I apparently did it well enough to, you know, make me the voice of the character. And that's another thing, we're just kind of like, you know, hanging on to these different skills make me, you know, fit enough to be able to do this job. Like, I'm certainly not as versatile as a lot of the professional voice actors who come in. I want to get better at it, but just kind of knowing stuff about breath support, and, you know, not being afraid to go really goofy and wild and out there when I'm doing the voice really helped. Because there were a couple of characters that we had to recast, and for one of them, when we were trying to find someone to voice this female character, we were getting a lot of auditions where the actress was not, like, she was doing the voice just fine, but wasn't able to give us the over-the-top crazy performance. Like, she was kind of, they were very often kind of holding back, and Carol and I have kind of wondered how many of these women have been coached, or either by an actual voice coach, or just kind of by society, to not be the crazy, loud girl, to be the quiet, pretty, demure girl, because we're like, no, this character's crazy. Like, oh, and she's in the show, Morbidia. She's William Shatner, but a witch. Like, this, she's not, you know, you can't have this even tone with her. You've got to be out there. And we just get these performances. It's like, gave you the reference material. This is not at all what this is, and we're just audition after audition, just like, are you guys not letting yourselves be wild and loud? And listening to those, kind of realizing, like, that maybe is an asset if I want to keep going with this voiceover thing, is not being afraid to be over the top and nuts with my voice acting, because one of the two recurring characters is certainly very loud and over the top.
One thing I really love about Mighty Magiswords is that there is, like, pretty even representation on the screen. I mean, it's a brother and sister warrior duo, and I mean, that's fantastic, you know? She's not a princess, that's great, you know?
Some
diversity of roles. But, that's really interesting to bring up that thing with the voice acting. I never really thought of that.
I don't want to, like, make it seem like, you know, certainly there's lots of very talented, diverse, like, you know, voice actresses with a wide range, but I think a lot of these younger voice actresses that we're having audition, either by lack of experience or poor coaching, were just, like, not able to give us the crazy performance that we needed until we found the current voice of Morbidia, who is perfect.
I mean, like, not only do you have, like, really great representation in the show between male and female, but you also have, like, that represented in your crew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, like, almost 50-50, exactly.
Yeah. Kyle has certainly never been one to... He's always enjoyed being around ladies, and I don't think he's ever, well, only want to hire one type of person.
Well, you guys know so many people.
Yeah. And so we've, like, made connections and friendships with this, you know, varied group of people. We have, like, a wide age range and relatively diverse, and certainly try to be balanced as far as gender goes. Because, yeah, the show is not weighted too heavily one way or the other, so we certainly don't want it being written predominantly by one or the other. I mean, this is maybe something for if you have both of us on at some point, but I know that early on, trying to get shows made, Kyle ran into a lot of, like, weird responses to him wanting to have female protagonists. Like, I think a question he got for one of his show ideas was, so why is she a girl? Why wouldn't she be? Why should she not be? Just this, like, weird, sad response to him wanting to have female protagonists. And so I think part of having this equally balanced, you know, male and female leads, you know, you can't have one without the other. Like, I think this is kind of his way of, like, okay, you can't push Vamber out of the spotlight because they are equally, you know, the main characters. And so, you know, it's something that we have had to, you know, tell our new storyboard artists when they come in. It's like, no, this is not a case of Prahias is the funny one and Vamber is the smart, nagging one. They're both silly. They both are smart in their own way. You need to write for both of them as people. And I think something that he was kind of worried about was developing, as the show developed, was, you know, are they going to try to push, you know, is the network going to try to push Vamber into the background and have the, you know, Prahias take the forefront? And fortunately, they have been interested in doing that, I think, because they realized, like, hey, it'd be good if we had girls watching the cartoons as well, and you know, having representation helps make it more appealing to all genders.
That's great.
It's like, it comes up a lot in our discussions of, like, oh, like, maybe someday we'll have toys, and it's like, well, I really hope, you know, whatever toy manufacturers we have don't do what they do with so many TV show toy lines and only make the boy character toys. It would be really hard with our show, because Vamber is absolutely the co-lead, and a lot of our lead characters are female, but it is a sad thing that seems to happen a lot with, you know, kids' toys. A lot of female characters in the current Ninja Turtles, not a lot of female toys.
What do you think, like, we can do right now, wherever anyone might be, to get new voices out there? Whether it's, like, a young artist or, like, new characters?
I mean, I would say for people creating things who might be unsure about I don't know how to write girls, or I don't know how to write this type of, you know, ethnicity or, you know, sexual preference or whatever. Like, I can't add this diverse character because I don't know how to write them. Like, start by writing a human, and then that human is a girl. Amazing. That's the easiest way to start. It's just that, like, so often male is seen as default, and female is seen as other, and it's like, both of those are human. They, you know, both of those make up the population. Like, you know, 50% of the population is not, you know, other. It's all human, and so just start writing people, and this one happens to be a lady, this one happens to be a dude, this one happens to be gay. Like, you don't have to, you know, just because you have a lady doesn't mean all of your stories have to be about shopping or whatever. Something that just kind of astounded me with the new Ghostbusters that just came out, it's like the first movie that I can think of that is, you know, stars four female leads where the story that they're telling and the things that they're doing are not specifically female-oriented. Nobody's planning a wedding. They're not going shopping. They're doing a thing that could be done by anyone. They just happen to be women. And I think that's kind of how you have to start out with it. You might need to get into the different ways they're affected by the world, but the first place to start is to just start writing the character, but don't default to dude because that's what the world has done for so long. Like, the default is not dude. The default is human, or the default is talking cat, or whatever. You know, don't think of women, gay people, trans people, black people as other. Everybody's human. So that's, I would say, the first step to it.
It seems like part of your process is being very intentional and really thoughtful about all of this stuff. Does that just come naturally, or were there any incidents that kind of made you be, like, introspective about these topics?
I think I've always been very thoughtful, sometimes to a fault, but I think just kind of becoming more aware, when you start thinking about these topics and the relationship between men and women and how the different ways that they're handled in media and society, it's hard to stop thinking about it, because you just, once you start noticing it, you just keep noticing all the weird inequalities. I think a lot of listening to podcasts, there's one that I haven't listened to in a while, but I used to listen to a lot. Actually, part of the reason I stopped listening to it is it just would make me angry, is Stuff Mom Never Told You, which is, you know, just kind of goes into the history either of women in history or products specifically associated with women or fashion or just like all this different stuff and kind of going into the history of why is this thing like this? And so often I'm going to be like, because, you know, this thing that's kind of difficult for women now, it kind of leads back to this shitty white dude 200 years ago and they decided that they didn't want women to do this thing and so now it sucks when you have to try to do this thing. So it's like they kept making me mad. It's like, I have to stop listening to this for like, if I don't want to be just angry all the time. But it's something where it's like, well, that started the ball rolling, where it's like, and now you just notice it all the time. And so pointing all this stuff out to Kyle has made him more aware of, oh, that does suck. And I think everything he's encountered, just trying to have a female protagonist in all these shows that he's pitched, just because, you know, he likes creating female characters, and all the weird responses he'd get, I think has made him more determined to, like, well, I'm just going to keep sticking girls in my shows. Just, like, as characters, I don't think he wants any of them to be written lazily, and so we try to be very thoughtful about what is in character and what is not in character, and never defaulting to, well, this is how a girl character would act, and this is how the boy character would act. It's like, no, how does Vamber act? How does Zanji act?
So this is a question that I ask everyone. So what is the advice that you would give 21-year-old Lindsay?
You're gonna be okay. Your desire to give everything a try and do a bunch of different stuff is not a misguided one. Just because all those different skills can, you know, combined into something useful and worthwhile. And also, don't cling too much to cynicism or sarcasm, you know, because that can make you feel worse than, it's like, how much of the cynical humor that you're putting out is really worth it. I think I would have this sort of, like, cocky, cynical, sarcastic view, and they would just wind up making me feel worse. And it's something I've had to let go of. Be kind, be friendly, maybe go try to make more friends. I spend a lot of time in front of my computer. I do wish I'd cultivated more, like, social skills and an ability to talk, because I do struggle with it, as I'm sure you'll discover when you're editing this episode.
That'll be okay, Lindsay. It's going better than... I know it, like, it's hard to be in the scene, but it's going better than you probably feel like it is.
Okay, good.
The other thing is, what advice specifically would you give young women about to embark on their journey to get into the industry?
I mean, the advice that I, like, generally give as far as, like, making yourself appealing for working in the industry is to be friendly, try to be easy to work with. This does not mean that you have to let yourself be stepped on. Don't be afraid to assert yourself if you feel as though you are being swept aside, but generally being friendly and being able to work with a group is something that they look, you know, people look for when they're trying to hire a team. This is, I think, something that young women don't need to be told, because we're constantly being told to be happy and friendly. But, you know, you don't have to put on the mask. Just being able to work in a group is important. Don't be afraid to put yourself in front of, you know, assert yourself and put yourself in front of, I don't know, creators, artists that you like. Networking is definitely a thing. And you can make artists and creators aware of you without, you know, without it feeling like begging. Just say, hello, I'm here, I do this thing, I like your art. Hi. Put yourself out there, talk to people, friends. You don't have to, like, it's good to network and be friendly, but you certainly don't need to put up with any bullshit or grossness just to get into the biz. There are, you know, plenty of people who should be willing to give you the time of day and not be gross about it. You know, don't think that you have to put up with gross, sexist, shitty behavior just to get into animation. Because there are, you know, gross people out there, and I have seen artists, you know, certain artist dudes prey on young women and make them think that, like, this is just the way artist dudes are, and this is what you have to put up with to be in the business. It's not. There are a lot of very nice, lovely, mature people who will, you know, treat you as a human and give you the respect that you deserve without you having to deal with gross behavior. So don't put up with gross behavior. Do what you're, you know, keep making, make lots and lots of art, put it out there where people can see it, and say hello, be friendly, but don't put up with anybody's shit. There it is.
Could never put that better myself. So, speaking of putting your work out there, where can our listeners find you online?
I have a Tumblr that is comicsmith.tumblr.com, comicsmith. Sometimes I post artwork on there. A lot of times it's just me reblogging pictures of birds, and also a lot of feminist stuff, which is not a bad word. It's a good word, ladies. But, you know, sometimes I find time to do sketches, and I actually put sketches up there, and I think, like I said, once the two characters that I play are actually available to the public, I'll probably be drawing a lot of them.
Right.
And it's also me reblogging artwork from people that I love. DaisyIsDead.net is still on the web. You might actually be better off just Googling that, because I actually no longer remember if it's all one word or if it's hyphenated or if I ever managed to get daisyisdead.com, but it's up there. And if you really want to read my college comics, they're at freshman15.deviantart.com. Like, I made these when I was in my late teens, early 20s, so probably sometimes I go back and read them and I cringe, you know?
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't think there's anything super terrible on there, but, you know, certainly some of my views have evolved since then. But that's where a lot of my stuff is.
Do you, like, you say that you cringe, but you still keep it up. Is there a reason?
Well, I mean, none of it's, well, part of it is just being, again, lazy. Like, I don't feel like eventually I might go put a lot of this stuff into storage, but there's nothing like, I don't think I was ever, like, racist or anything on there, but it's just like, it's just kind of like, you know, these were made in the early to mid-2000s, and certainly I've, like, with you know, the limited knowledge of a 20-year-old Lindsay, just kind of, like, seeing the world in my sort of simplified views and being like, ah, I'm a genius. This is brilliant material that I'm writing here. Yeah, I've got it all figured out.
But that's the beauty of it, though, because at that moment, that was your genius.
Yeah, yeah.
Know? And you've evolved, and I love that you're keeping it up.
Because
I think it's really important to see, like, an evolution of an artist.
Yeah, and it's and again, I don't think it's anything, like, really disgusting, but it's, you know, there's you know, some ways in which things are phrased that I would not phrase it now. But yeah, it's there, and want to look at it, go for it.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Seriously, this is, like, I'm so happy that you finally agreed to come on.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, like, I'm happy to be on it, and I'm honored that you wanted me to be on it. This is, again, my poor self-esteem talking, but it's like, oh, I haven't done that much. You know, I had a weird pathway to get here, and so I guess it is probably worth sharing that, you know, you don't necessarily have to have an arts degree. I think that's a question we get a lot working at Cartoon Network. Like, oh, I didn't go to CalArts, am I doomed? Like, no, I went to a state school, I went to a UC. Like, you're okay. Just absorb information and use it where you can. So yeah, I feel honored that you wanted me to come on the podcast and share my unique experiences.
Yeah, I think it'll help a lot of people that are somewhere in the same familiar journey that you. So thank you again.
Yes, happy to be here.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. It helps us reach and share these stories with a wider audience. Want to chat? We're on Twitter at Ink, the letter N, Paint Girls, on Facebook at Ink and Paint Girls Podcast, or email us at inkandpaintgirlspodcast@gmail.com. The Ink and Paint Girls Podcast is brought to you by me, creator and host Cassie Soliday, and produced by Val Patron in sunny Burbank, California. Music composed by TV's Kyle. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Girls Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Going into this industry, you have to expect rejection. Like, you can't work at it for 6 months, go, well, I didn't get a yes, and go home. It's going to take a while.